There are a number of factors that motivate us to continue doing what we're presently doing. We have bills to pay, the kids must be fed. There just has to be something under the Christmas tree so that the children will have a happy Christmas, whether it's money or just some simple toys. That motivation, on the other hand, may also lead us into situations in which we have no control and having absolutely no idea how they're going to end. I'm your host, MC, and this is episode 36 of the MC Horror Podcast. This is actually my mom's story, and will be told from her personal account as she was telling it to me. It was early December of 2005. My brother, Alex, and his wife's fourth child had just started first grade, so with her having full days of school, they had more time to pick up some extra hours and try to get ready for Christmas. All he could find at the time is work with companies where he would drive a work truck to different counties in our state making deliveries between businesses that weren't worth getting a big semi-truck for. After the big snowstorm we had in 1999 that trapped us all at home for weeks, none of us liked the idea of him being on the road. But you know your uncle, he couldn't stand the idea of having nothing under the tree on Christmas. I didn't even want to go with him. When he asked me, I had the worst feeling about it, but the weather channels all said the storm wouldn't last, and I was the only one out of us that had a cell phone, so I couldn't just let him go out there alone. If something happened and he froze to death because he couldn't call for help, I don't know if I would be able to live with myself. So I dropped you off at your aunt's house and told your father I'd be back in a few days. That was it. That was the start of it all, a route that he had done 100 times up to that point. But the Weather Channel was wrong. By the time we were nearing the Vermont border and all those mountains came up, every single one of them didn't have a speck of color on them. Everything around us was white. There were points when all we could do was follow the tire tracks on the road from vehicles in front of us and hope they didn't go off the road for us to follow. We were starting to lose the light by the time we were closing in on Burlington, Vermont, and we figured that would be as good a place as any to spend the night. I hate cities, but driving those roads in the dark was not an option. We only had to drive through the back way to Montpelier, and then it was smooth sailing on the interstate right back into Burlington. In the morning, we could reassess our route and cut through to New Hampshire, and from there, towards the city. I remember we filled up at a gas station, and it was so cold that when we brought our coffee to the van, it didn't even burn our mouths to drink it. There was nothing but ice out there, but we were sure we could make it to the interstate, and then the roads would be clear, so we kept going, even though we felt off about it. We were talking about what we were getting you kids for Christmas and where we'd be getting together to have Christmas dinner that year when we hit the mountain. I said unto him, "We should turn around and go back. This isn't safe." For a minute, I thought he'd listen, but then he shifted the gear on the van and said, "Go back to what?" He was right. We hadn't seen anything since we got our coffees, and they were stone cold by then. It was actually okay for a while. We were following another car stuck behind a plow, so it was the safest place to be at that time, or so we thought. The next bit is always a bit hazy for me. We saw the snowplow jerk toward the edge of the mountainside, and we were so afraid of him going through the bars and off the side of the mountain, I didn't even consider what he was jerking away from until I heard Alex yell. I was watching the snowplow trying to right itself and keep itself on the road, and I didn't even have time to look out the windshield to see what he was yelling about before the car in front of us hit us. When everything stopped moving, my coffee was everywhere. All over me, the windshield, my phone, everything. My chest was on fire and my legs felt like, well, like they'd just been hit by a car. I checked my phone first thing, but no good. It was gone. So much for calling for help. The next thing I checked was my brother. His mouth was bleeding and his eyes were closed. But when I said his name and shook him, he groaned. So at least I knew that he was alive. All I could see in front of us was ice and rock, so I had no idea what the other driver's states were, but I had to get to a phone and get help, so I told him to stay put, and I got out of the car. Of course, he didn't listen to me, because he never does. So before I could even register what I was looking at, he was behind me, calling my name and telling me not to leave him. In front of us was this large work truck, and flat as a pancake, right in front of it was a car in front of us. I couldn't move. They had to be dead. No one could have survived that. But Alex ran the best he could, holding his chest and stumbling around the car, and pried open the passenger door to the truck. I finally got out of my daze when he told me to stay away from the truck. My heart sank. Was everyone dead? Were we the only ones who survived? Being all alone on that mountain, surrounded by metal, rocks, freezing cold wind, ice, and dead bodies, with no way to get help and miles away from anyone or anything, was the worst feeling I've ever experienced. There was another vehicle that wasn't there though, probably someone who might be alive. The snowplow was gone. There was a big dent in the guardrails and we couldn't see him, so he left us to go get help. What else could we think? No one that's not pure evil could see what we saw and not stay to help unless they knew they needed to get the police. I was about to mention the snowplow when he finally got the door open, only to find himself up to his ankles in trash. He didn't hesitate though. He was going for the radio and climbed into the truck where I couldn't see him. I panicked. Even him just being out of sight, I couldn't stand being alone up there, so I ran to the truck despite knowing what I'd find, but I had to stop before I got to the door anyway. It smelled like a brewery mixed with pennies. I knew that smell. Enough alcoholics are in our family to know that smell. Alex cursed and tumbled back out of the truck, and I went to him to help him up, trying to ignore the fresh blood on his clothes and the ever stronger smell of alcohol and blood filling my nose coming from the now open door. Radio's dead. Thing won't even start, he snarled, gripping his chest again. I started to tell him my thoughts on the plow when we heard a horrible scream that made us both flinch away from the panic behind it. I practically dropped Alex on the ground, racing back around to the front of the truck to the car, and inside was a young girl. She was beautiful, brown hair with blonde highlights, a Lilo and Stitch shirt, and the most beautiful blue eyes I'd ever seen that were filled with tears and terror. She was confused and screaming in between words, reaching out to me, and I grabbed her hands. Alex, in a rush to get to me and get me away from the scene, crashed into me, and she cried out when my hands were pulled from hers, but I was right back to the window in seconds with her, pushing him off me. "We'll get you out, honey. I promise." I turned on Alex as he tugged on me again. He had to have some sort of idea, right? He could get her. One door was already pried open. We could do another, but his eyes were gigantic when he looked at me and he wouldn't say a word. Coming from a guy who has never shut up since the day he was born, I met his eyes, then followed where he led my gaze to, and a fresh set of tears sprung on me all over again. Right underneath the feet of Stitch on her shirt and the bit of her stomach that was showing with how she was sitting, there was only solid metal. The rest of her couldn't even be seen. She didn't seem to understand what happened to make me react like that, and started panicking when she followed our eyes, realizing what we did. She began panicking all over again, begging us to tell her where her legs were, so I shushed her, holding her hands tight and promising her that she'd be okay, that help was coming and they'd get her out. I don't know how long I stood there. Alex eventually went back to the truck and in the mostly undamaged back of ours to see if he could find anything to help fight off the cold while we waited. But there wasn't much. He even searched the area and the trash that fell out of the drunk man's truck, but no luck there either. I gave her my jacket after we put on every piece of clothing that we brought with us for the trip. She was getting cold though, and her voice was getting weaker. More quiet. It was completely dark by then. All we could see was what the snow let us and our flashlights that would run out of battery eventually. Alex tried to convince me to get back into our vehicle to get out of the wind, but I just couldn't leave her. When I looked into her eyes, all I could see was you when you got that age one day. She wasn't even 20 yet, trying to get home for Christmas. She told me about her family, about college, and her life up to that point, and her jerk of a boyfriend that was supposed to come with her but canceled at the last minute to spend the holidays with his friends instead. She decided before the end that it was a good thing, though. She said he was a good man and that he didn't deserve to die like this, too. She was much calmer by this point, not even acknowledging the fact that she was practically in half. I think deep down she knew she wasn't going home and needed someone to listen to her as she tried to make sense of how this could be, how her life was going to end. She kept mentioning how cold it was getting, but as soon as Alex noticed me removing my layers of clothing to give to her, he scolded me, demanding that I keep as bundled up as possible. He told me that she was already dead and that we are the ones who needed the warmth, not her. I knew that he was right, but I cursed him anyway, shoving him away from her. Even if she too knew that he was right, he didn't need to say that in front of her. She had even grown quieter after some time. We kept giving each other assurances that everything would be okay instead of the conversation of before. By that time, I was struggling against the cold, even with Alex hugging me, trying to keep the wind on his back and off of me when we heard sirens in the distance. My brother and I looked at each other, and without even saying anything or showing any emotion, he staggered and limped as fast as he could toward them, holding the flashlight over his head and waving it. He couldn't yell without devolving into coughs and spitting up more blood, but gritting his teeth against the pain, hand on his chest, he waved the light all over the road towards the sirens, eventually seeing the lights of police, firefighters, and ambulances. I told her that they were coming, that they'd help her, and this was all over, but she didn't react. She gave me a sad smile, and it broke my heart into a million pieces. I knew that she knew by then that she wasn't going to make it. But seeing the acceptance mixed in with fear on her face and hearing how thankful she was that I was with her and how lucky my daughter was to have me in her life was more than I could take. I let go of her hand and did what my brother couldn't. I stood and jumped, waving the flashlight over my head, screaming that we needed the ambulance over here, that she needs help. They listened and rushed over as fast as they could, but Alex was right. There was no helping her. She got to call her mother on one of the EMT's phones and tell her that she loved her, along with some other messages to her other family. Then they moved her to try to get her out. And that was it. They took me away into the ambulance after they ensured her pulse had stopped. She was dead. The drunk guy was dead. My brother could be dying for all I know, and none of it felt real. My brother and I were allowed to ride in an ambulance together. It was against protocol, but given what we went through and how devastated I was, they allowed it. I think Alex would have attacked them if they tried to separate him from me at that point. Regardless, he wasn't letting me out of his sight until we were in a building with heat and off that mountain. Once we got to the hospital, they took him away and I was alone, so I called your father. I told him where I was and the gist of what happened. Then I called your aunt, told her even less of what happened, and that I would call her the second I heard anything about Alex, and she had to wake you up since it was almost 3 in the morning, but I had to hear your voice. Now, it's 2021, and when it's cold outside, my skin burns as if it's being stabbed by heated needles. Alex had so much blood in his lungs by the time they came that he still has problems with breathing to this day. We both had broken ribs that healed, and the surgery I had to get later on my legs went fine. It's 2021, and we're alive. We got to come home and have Christmas and all the Christmases since then, and I saw you grow up to be the age of that poor girl and then surpass her. I never went to her funeral or met with her family. I've always regretted that. These days, I don't even remember her voice, her family's names. I don't even remember what school she went to or where exactly her boyfriend went for Christmas instead of going home with her. I don't remember how her hands felt or the smell of the shampoo in her hair. Shoot, most of the time, it doesn't even feel like she was a real person, like it was a horrible dream or something that happened to someone else. But that smile she gave me at the end, how she knew it was over but was too scared to actually say it, how one of her last acts was to reassure me that she knew that she was going to die and that it was going to all be okay. Just like we said, that I will never forget. If you or anyone you know have a horror story that you'd like to be narrated on here, please fill out the form that's linked in the description below. There are also links to the music used, as well as if you want to submit some feedback to help improve your listening experience. My friends, horror is all around us. We just try our best to avoid it. Once again, I'm your host, MC, signing out. Thanks for taking the time to check out the MC Horror Podcast. Have a great night.